Luke chapter 24 is what we're going to look at towards the end of the chapter over this next month, in this month here in January. And it's going to be verses 45 through 49. And it says this, "Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. And he said to them, 'Thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day, and that repentance for forgiveness of sins would be proclaimed in his name to all the nations, beginning from Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things. And behold, I am sending forth the promise of my Father upon you, but you are to stay in the city until you are clothed with power from on high.'" You have heard me say multiple times, I'm sure, about that I am a political junkie. And I am not sure why I am. I just know that following the news reports, and watching debates is something that has always intrigued me. Where Miranda is the exact opposite, many times I say, "Did you hear about this one? Did you hear about what they just did? Did you hear about this?" And it's usually a no. And it's amazing to me that people can exist without knowing every headline and every single thing that happens each and every day. It was a few years ago when I first started on this thing called Twitter, and if any of you have been on Twitter, it's an amazing thing, because what happens on Twitter is you can literally get the real-time news before the news even gets it. It's amazing. But, of course, what I find out is that it becomes so, it's like 99.9% negative, and it's depressing, and it's always the ugly stuff that is happening in the world. And it's always the stuff that is meant to scare you, to think that how bad things really are. Look at how bad things are in the world. Look at how bad things are in the United States. Look at how bad it's getting here. Look at how bad it's getting there. Anybody notice anything recently happened that everybody's saying that about? Yes, but you know, if you think about it, this isn't the first time we've had something like that where we have said, "Oh, look at how bad it's getting now." It's happened, and it's happened, and it's happened, and it's going to continue to happen. And one of the things that I find interesting and intriguing, and I think I was this way as a kid as well, and we have a few teenagers here this morning, that as teenagers especially, you kind of get to that mode where you think that people like me don't understand. You know, you're at that age where you don't get it. You don't understand how hard the world is, how bad things are. I was that way as a teen as well, looking to my parents. Oh, you have no idea how bad it is. The peer pressure that I have to go through, what I have to face, what I have to encounter. You have no idea what it is. Because for some reason, there's something that goes through a teenager's mind that says that an adult has no concept of what it means to struggle. That somehow we just breeze through life and there was never an issue. There was never a problem and everything was great and it was all tremendous. And one of the things that I keep coming back to with that idea is the thought that this generation, whether we like it or not, this generation did not invent sin. Sin has been around ever since man fell. And a lot of the challenges I give at times, and people say, "Look at how bad it's getting," and I've been one of them many times. Miranda can tell you how many times I can go, "Oh my goodness, this is really bad. Look at what's going to happen now. Look at what's going to happen now." This happens almost every year, and then things really don't happen the way that I thought, or that I predicted, or that I expected because of what the media was telling me. But I challenge anybody who says, "Oh, it's getting bad now," just read the Old Testament. And then tell me how bad it's getting. This isn't anything new. This has been around from the beginning of time, ever since man fell. Things have been difficult. And this whole idea of peer pressure and everything else, when has it ever been easy to serve Jesus? Throughout the history of the church, when in the world was it ever a time of, "Boy, it's easy to serve Jesus now"? No, it's always been difficult to serve Jesus. Why? It's always been countercultural. How did Jesus even define it? You have the wide road and the narrow road, right? So what we're doing here in January is, for the next few Sundays, we have four ways to protect your faith in 2020. Because so much of everything around us is telling us that Christianity's going to die, Christianity's done, we're going to lose our rights, which, and that may happen. I'm not going to predict that it can't happen, but there's always a possibility of that happening, that somehow all of this is going to go away and we're going to be miserable and our life is going to be a disaster. So what I want to do is be proactive about those things and say, well, here are some steps we can take to make sure that doesn't happen to us individually. Because there are many times that where our faith is challenged, whether it's through the culture, whether it's through something national, whether it's through politics, whatever, our faith can be challenged, whether it's because that law was passed or whatever happens. And the question becomes, how can we get to a place where regardless of the challenge that is attacking our faith, that we can still stand firm? Because you look at the stories in the New Testament and you look at the ideas of the apostles, when they became apostles in the book of Acts, there was absolutely nothing that you could do to them that was going to take their faith away. Nothing. Well, what if we killed them? They did. Martyrs, all except John and Judas, they were martyrs. Killed for their faith. You look through the New Testament, the writers of the New Testament. You have James, the one who wrote James. They called James in before the committee, and they said, tell us that Jesus is not the Christ. And they said, if you do not tell us this, that if you do not recant the fact that Jesus is the Christ, we are going to execute you. And he looked at them, and he said, Jesus is the Christ, and he was executed. You see, there was nothing that shook their faith, nothing. And here I am in 2020, and I look at a Twitter feed, and I get a news report, and I'm shaken because of, oh, look at what's going to happen, because I see a headline of something that may happen. It hasn't even really happened yet. We don't even know if it's going to happen. And I look at this, and I say, how can I get to the place where they were, where nothing is going to shake my faith? So what do we do in a world like this today? When we look at what has happened, what has changed, the rapid changes that have happened in our culture. I would go back to, let's just start with 1950. We've had rapid changes happen since then. In fact, historians say that between 1950 and now, in that span of time, that was the most changes probably that have ever taken place throughout history, because everything just changed. And it changed with technology, and it changed with the computer, it changed with a smartphone, it changed with everything. All of the different changes that have taken place. Things are so much different now. Over the last 10, 15 years in the Christian world, in the religious world, we've had changes and challenges because of laws being passed that we don't really support or we're not really behind. And we've seen that rapidly change. And we're thinking, my goodness, what are we going to have? What are the kids learning in school now? What are the teens learning in school? What's happening in the high schools now? What's happening here? What's happening in the churches? What's happening? And we get videos that show us all of these things that are happening. And so we have these rapid changes taking place, and then we're left with the question, how do we stand firm in the midst of all this? What do we do to stand firm? You see, the disciples were all shaky. They were all like, they didn't have a solid foundation when Jesus was here. And when he walked with them, they weren't solid. They went back and forth. They didn't understand. They got confused. They said the wrong thing. They did the wrong thing. They thought Jesus meant one thing and he meant something else. And then here in chapter 24, we have this whole issue of them not believing that Jesus was resurrected. And all the evidence coming before them wasn't enough. Jesus himself coming before them wasn't enough. They still doubted it. They still didn't think it was him. And they still didn't think it was possible. But right here at the very beginning of this passage in verse 45 is the most important verse I would suggest in the entire chapter. Or probably in the entire book of the Gospel of Luke is verse 45 that says this. Then he, Jesus, opened their minds to understand the scriptures. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. Have you ever been in a situation where you didn't understand something? Where you didn't quite get it? And some around you got confused because of the clarifying questions you were asking because they seemed to get it, but yet you didn't quite get it. I always fall into that category. For some reason, my mind is just works kind of slow in that way, and I like to process things differently, and so I like to ask questions, and I've asked way too many questions. In fact, I remember one time my philosophy teacher in college, he blamed me for one entire class that went off the rails because I asked one question, and that one question just spurned everything else. And he was like, "What made you think of a question like that afterwards?" Because, you know, you'll be talking about this, and I'll ask a question that's like way out here, and you'll say, "What in the world does that question have to do with what I just said? Why are you even asking that?" Well, I'm just seeking understanding. And sometimes I seek understanding too much. And I try to do that. But if you've ever been in a situation where you don't understand, it's very difficult. Now, I've shared with you some of this before, but I remember when we were in the Ukraine, and we were in the Ukraine, and we go through customs. See, customs is very interesting with me because, you know, you have like, you know, bad liars. You know, people have said, you know, "You're a bad liar. I can tell when your lying is written all over your face." I guess I've come to the conclusion I'm a bad truth teller. Because every time I've gone through customs, except for Swaziland, when I hid behind Ken and Will, every time I go through customs, even I'm telling the truth and they're still not believing me. I don't know. And Miranda says, "You just look guilty. You just look like something's going, you just have this face as soon as I start to answer." So they start this. So we go through customs and Miranda goes through first. I don't know how we got split up somehow. She goes in this line, I go in this line, which I, on the way out, I clung to her the whole time. So she's going through. And I'm watching her out of the corner of my eye. And they're over there laughing, popping jokes, walking through. "Have a good day." Miranda goes through. I go through, and I get this guy. I'm convinced he was put there out of punishment. I'm convinced that they said, "Hey, you did that wrong. What's my punishment? You're going to go down to customs." Ah. So he's sitting there, and I give him my form. And this is exactly what he said. This is a direct quote. "Gifts, Ukraine." "Gifts, Ukraine." I don't quite understand what your gifts to Ukraine. "Do I have gifts for you? Do you have gifts for Ukraine?" "My wife brought some books for the kids." "What books?" "You need to fill out a new custom declaration." Okay. So Miranda's over there waiting by the door and she's saying, "Here we go again." And I say, "He wants me to go fill out the custom declaration." And she goes, "Go do it." So I go and I get it. He takes me in. He searches me. I mean, the whole thing happens. And it was all because, all of it happened because I couldn't understand. And I wanted to make sure before I tried to answer exactly what he was meaning each time he asked me a question. Now, that happens all the time with me. When somebody asks, I always stall. I always say, "Well, exactly what do you mean? Can you tell me exactly where that's coming from?" Because I'm seeking to understand. Now, it's difficult to understand. Like in that case, there was a language barrier, right? If you've ever had a language barrier before, it's difficult. And a lot of times, we just naturally just laugh together. If somebody speaks another language and we don't understand, we just kind of chuckle. I remember down in Mexico, I met a guy there who he was trying to learn English and I was trying to learn Spanish. And we were trying to help each other. Boy, that was something. And we're trying to help each other. And this language barrier was making it extremely difficult. But it's hard when we don't understand things. It's difficult when we don't understand. We get frustrated when we don't understand. Now, this happened with the disciples. It happened with Mary and Joseph. We just had the Christmas story. You remember Mary and Joseph. They lose Jesus. They come back to the temple. Jesus says to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know I had to be about my Father's business?" And what does Luke say then? He says in the very next verse at the end of chapter 2, they did not understand, the same Greek word. They did not understand what he was saying. Now, I was joking with some from the worship team about the whole "Mary, Did You Know" song that always comes around Christmas time that was written by Mark Lowry. And I remember a few years ago, somebody posted on Twitter, they said, "Hey, by the way, Mark, Mary did know, the angel told her." Right? But, keeping it in context, according to Luke, she didn't understand. The angel told her, Simeon told her, but Jesus himself told her, And Luke says, but she still didn't understand. So you can be told a lot of things and still not get it. Jesus, when he told the disciples that he's going to be scourged and the chief priests and the elders are going to crucify him, and that on their third day he's going to rise again, Luke again uses the same word and he says, but they did not understand what he was saying. And then he explains the crucifixion to him again in another passage. Luke uses the exact same term and says, but they did not understand what he was saying. So here in chapter 24, the end of the Gospel of Luke is when they finally get it. He opened up their minds to understand the scriptures. This is when they finally get it. So all this time, they've been following Jesus. They didn't understand. They didn't get it. And now, here it is. The light bulb is going off right now. The aha moment is taking place right now. And the disciples are finally understanding the scriptures. The term understanding is interesting. If you look it up in the Greek text, it's the idea of following a logical pattern is what understanding means. Like you understand the steps that complete the entire thought is what understanding means. And the analogy that is used in a Greek lexicon is the analogy of a puzzle. How many here have done a puzzle before in your entire life? How many people enjoy puzzles? I don't. What's the largest puzzle that anybody's ever done here? Anybody done 500? Oh, yeah, look at, man, people are like, oh, come on, that's nothing. 1,000. 1,500. 2,000. 3,000. Almost. You just have two more to go, right? Yes. It's interesting, isn't it? Now, you know, when I first started doing puzzles, I tried to do it just the haphazard way of just putting it together, you know, just dumping it out and then just going this. But if you get up to especially 500,000, 1,500, whatever, and you dump those out, you just can't do it that way. You have to follow this process, right? And the process typically is what? Number one, you find the corners. And number two, you find the edge pieces. And then once you get all of the corners and the edge pieces done, then you're able to fill in the entire puzzle. And it's amazing how something that is all in pieces when you dump it out, when it's complete, it's amazing how the picture begins to form and you're able to see it. But I always get confused because I think these people that do the paintings for the puzzles love to trick us because the blue color on up here and the blue color down here is just about exactly the same. And you think you have it, but you don't. And you can't do what we did as kids and just jam that piece in even if it doesn't fit. But there's something about the whole process of doing a puzzle. It takes time. It takes concentration. You look at it. You examine it. You take the corners. You take the edge pieces. You follow the steps until you can get it complete. Now, let me just throw this out there. I'm sure nobody here has ever done this before. But let me just throw it out. Show of hands, has anybody here ever in your life started a puzzle that you didn't finish? Come on, there we go. Yes, right? I've done that. You get to that point, it's kind of like the New Year's resolution thing, right? You set your goal, you're going to finish the puzzle, and then you just do a little bit, and then before you know it, you get tired of it and exhausted, and you can move on to something else. I wonder if anybody here has ever done that with the scriptures. Because, you know, one thing we're very big on in the church, we always talk about reading your Bible. And we always talk about you individually reading your Bible. And I've had people over the years, since I've been in ministry, who have given me reasons why they don't want to follow that. People have told me they didn't need to read their Bible. And many times people have said, well, number one, I'm not much of a reader, was one excuse that I've been given. I've also been given, I tried it before and nothing happened. I've also been given the excuse of I read it and there's nothing there. It doesn't do anything for me. It's a waste of my time. Why would God make it so hard, Pastor, if I'm supposed to study and read his word? Why wouldn't he make it easier? I want you to think about that just for a moment today. In the way that you view the scriptures and the way that you view your personal Bible reading. Because one of the things that I think all of us need to be praying constantly is that what Jesus did for the disciples here in verse 45, that he should do that for each and every one of us. When he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. Because you may look at those attempts and those times over the years that you've opened the Bible and you've attempted to read the Bible, you've attempted to read the scriptures, but yet it looks just like that puzzle box that you dumped out of 1,500 pieces and nothing makes any sense. And you may say, why should I even waste my time with this? And the challenge I want to give you today is, because I'm sure all of us, probably all of us, maybe some here aren't that haven't, but I would guess probably all of us have at the very least, attempted to read the scriptures. And this is the season when we normally make a commitment to the Bible in a year. There's an app that they're advertising, several apps are advertising of what to follow, different reading plans. This is when we make a commitment. So this year I'm going to do it and I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to read the Bible and I'm going to commit myself to it. So I would venture to say that everyone here probably has at the very least, attempted and tried. And some of you have kept it up, and some of you haven't, and some of you just completely, possibly gave up. I want you to think about what Jesus is doing here for them, because the whole time the disciples are following Jesus, this was 3 years they followed Jesus, and they didn't understand. It was as if they knew he was the right guy, but they didn't know the specifics, or they didn't know exactly what it meant, or they didn't know exactly what it was about, but they stayed with him still. They never retreated, they never went back, they never went back to their home, they left everything to follow him. They knew he was the right guy, but they just didn't get it. They just didn't understand. So my challenge to you is, if you've ever attempted to do this and it didn't work out, do it again. And do it until it works out. Do it until he opens up your mind to be able to see the scriptures, where you have the aha moment, and before you know it, you have the edge pieces and the corners, and the next thing you know, a beautiful picture starts to be put together. Now, I appreciate the fact that all of you sat through the introduction to my sermon today. Because yes, that was the introduction. That was a segue, if you will. Because I am going to present to you this morning an opportunity. And I mean an opportunity. This is something you do not want to pass by, want to pass over. You don't want to forget about this. You want to commit to this. I guarantee you, you want to do this 1,000%. Man, Kevin just gave me a very interesting look. He gave me that. Where's he going with this? You are going to be inundated with opportunities this week. Inundated. Say that with me. Inundated. You know what that means? That means you don't have a choice. Okay? You're going to take one of the opportunities because this is what's happening. Every year, Jen Knoll, our children's director, she always does the Bible reading challenge every year. 100-day Bible reading challenge, and she starts it in January, and it goes to the end of April, and then in May, what happens is there's a skating party for everybody to join, to come to, if you completed it, right? Well, we have opened this up to the entire congregation because we want to see you skate. But here's the thing. This challenge, it starts on Wednesday of this week. Wednesday of this week. Okay, when does it start? Wednesday of this week. We are going to be reading 1 Peter. Okay, we are going to be reading 1 Peter. We are going to be reading 1 Peter. What are we going to read? 1 Peter, yes. And 1 Peter has 5 chapters. So we had a little adjustment we had to do, and Jen made this adjustment this weekend. It actually has 105 verses in 1 Peter. So we're changing it to the 105-day challenge, which means you are required to do what? One verse a day, starting Wednesday of this week. One verse a day. That's all we're asking you to do to complete this challenge. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because I tried to get out of the skating idea. I even asked Jen, I said, can we, you know, exchange our tickets for cash or, you know, something like that. And she said, no, she's a nice try, but she said they have a great food court there. So there's a little bit of benefit for everybody, skating, whatever, that's the reward. But it isn't just for the skating that we're doing this, obviously. What we're doing this for is because I am convinced that the first step in protecting our faith in 2020 is by getting into His Word and getting into the Scriptures. That's the first step. Everything else is good. All the other steps through the series I'm going to mention are solid. But at the very beginning, the foundation of how to protect our faith with everything we perceive going on around us, it starts with us individually in the Scriptures. And I am challenging every single one of this congregation. I don't care who you are, where you come from, your background, whatever it is, how long you've known Christ, how long, whatever, whether you've ever read the Bible before or maybe you haven't memorized, whichever, wherever you fall at the spectrum, I am challenging everyone to participate in this together starting on Wednesday. Now, the inundation is going to take place tomorrow, I believe, at least the beginning of the inundation, because what's going to happen is it's going to be on Facebook, it's going to be emailed to you, and you're going to have hard copies you can pick up. So we're covering every base, right? So there's no excuse. Well, I'm not on Facebook. Well, it's going to be emailed. Well, I don't have email. Well, it's going to be hard copy. You have no excuse. It's going to be in your hands, and you're going to be able to participate. And the amazing thing about it is, each day, you will be able to check off when you complete it, that you read that verse for that day. 105 days reading a verse a day. Now, beginning in February, the sermon series is going to line up with what we're reading in 1 Peter. I believe this is a tremendous opportunity for all of us together as a body of believers to come together and focus on God's Word and to make a commitment for 2020 that says, I'm going to take the first step in protecting my faith because I am going to get into His Word. And I am convinced that through this process, each of us are going to start to understand more of the Scriptures. He's going to open up our minds to the Scriptures the same way He did it to the disciples. He's going to honor our commitment and our faith. Because one of the reasons when people say, well, why would God make it so hard? Well, from the beginning, God made it difficult, didn't He? From the beginning, Adam and Eve, you can eat from any tree, just not, well, why do you do that? Why do you even put the tree there? Because from the beginning, God never wanted a robot to serve him. He never wanted somebody programmed to love him. He wanted them to actually be obedient because they desired to be obedient, not because they were forced to be obedient. Same thing with the scriptures. Well, why would God make it so hard? Why do we have to read? This is so confusing because God wants people who have a desire to actually put forth an effort to hear what he has to say instead of just sitting back and waiting for him to do so. That's what he's wanted from the beginning. So, thank you. Beginning of the conclusion of the message. When does this challenge start? When will you be inundated? How will you be inundated? Three ways. Number one. Okay, number one. Number two. Number three. Okay, and how many days are we doing this? And what book are we studying? All of you pass with flying colors. Thank you very much. Worship team, come on up.